Cultural critic Virginia Pastrell says glamour influences our decisions about what to buy, where to live, where what career paths to pursue, and even how to vote. Virginia is a columnist for Bloomberg View and former editor of Reason magazine. Her new book is called The Power of Glamour. Virginia, welcome to Central Time.
Great to be with you.
Well, let's start with a definition here. How would you define glamour these days?
Well, glamour is an imaginative process that arises from communication. It's like humor. There is an audience, and there is something or someone glamorous. And so the audience sees this glamorous object and feels a specific emotion in the same way that we identify humor by, oh, we find that funny, we're amused. In this case, it is a sense of projection and longing. We want to be in the world. We want to be the person that that glamorous object represents. And who or what or where, it can be a glamorous place or even a glamorous idea, we find glamorous depends on who we are and what our underlying desires are.
Is this what advertising does? It tries to figure out what we long for and then it tries to sell it to us?
Well, glamour, there are two answers to that question. One is glamour can be a tool of advertising. There are many other possible tools of advertising as well, including humor. The other thing is glamour is not necessarily associated with commerce. It is very strongly associated with commerce and trying to get people to buy things, but it can sell you things that are not about money. It can sell you ideas about religion, about politics. What glamour does is it takes our sort of inchoate longings and it focuses them on something particular, which could be a lifestyle, it could be a dress or a pair of shoes or a car, something that's being sold in the marketplace, or it could be the idea of being a nun is something I discuss in the Power of Glamour. It could be Barack Obama in 2008. It could be the ideal workplace represented by working on the bridge of the Starship Enterprise, which is another thing that I discuss in the book. But what glamour has in common across all of these things is, number one, this sense of projection and longing. That's how we identify it. And then what I do in the book is I go into the elements that create that sense of projection and longing. One is a promise of escape and transformation, a different, better life in different, better circumstances. Another is grace. Glamour is an illusion. There's always some element of illusion to it. The word originally meant a literal magic spell. And the illusion is grace. Glamour hides difficulties. It hides flaws. It hides trade-offs. It hides the practice that it takes to achieve something, all of the sort of downsides of things.
And so
then the third element is mystery.
And so hearing all that, all of those elements that go into it, you can see that glamour would have a pretty long reach. And you look at glamour extending as far as nationalism and military ads. How does it work in that case?
Absolutely. One of the interesting things that I found in doing my research is that one of the first uses of the word glamour, the way we use it today, that is not as a literal magic spell, but as some sort of a metaphorical use, was in the phrase the glamour of battle, military glamour, so that you see the courage, nationalistic or patriotic significance, the camaraderie, the adventure, all the sort of positive aspects of military action or being a soldier. And then, of course, it hides the negative aspects of warfare. And so that sort of military glamour is one of the very oldest kinds. I trace it all the way back to Achilles. But it's also something that never entirely goes away, even though often, for example, after World War I, people resolved that we're never going to fall for military glamour again. I mean, they actually would write things like that and using the word. And yet it is very powerful and it comes up again and again.
You make a comparison between glamour and charisma, and there are these different qualities that go along with both of those things. And it seems like maybe glamour is more associated with aloof qualities, and charisma is associated with being more earthy. And I wonder if you could talk about some of the people and things that embody glamour versus the things that embody charisma.
Yeah, this is one of the most popular parts of the book, and it's in the chapter about mystery. But one thing I try to do is separate glamour from things that are similar but different from it, and one of those things is charisma. Charisma is a personal quality, first of all. Only a person can be charismatic. A car can't be charismatic. A pair of shoes or Paris cannot be charismatic. It has to be a person. It's like intelligence. It's something you, this sort of star quality, it draws people in. It is a quality of leadership. It inspires loyalty. You know, most successful politicians have at least some charisma. Similarly, most successful actors do, including the ones who are not glamorous. Glamour is, as you say, somewhat more aloof. It always requires a sense of distance and mystery. Glamorous people are often referred to as self-contained. And what glamour does is it encourages the audience to project onto the glamorous person what they want. Whereas charisma inspires the audience to want to do what the charismatic person wants. So there's a real difference there. And I have a chart where I have lots of different people. But, for example, in the political realm, you know, Barack Obama, particularly in 2008, was very glamorous. People projected onto him what they wanted in a president, what they wanted in a country. He is a kind of slightly mysterious. He can't be too mysterious because people still have to be able to identify, but slightly mysterious, slightly aloof quality to him. Whereas Bill Clinton was very charismatic. I mean, we know way too much about Bill Clinton for him ever to be glamorous, but people were drawn to him, are drawn to him still. And every now and then you'll have a public figure who combines both, which is very difficult to do. Ronald Reagan had some of both. Steve Jobs had some of both. Nelson Mandela is somebody who's both glamorous and charismatic, although I would argue that had he not been in prison all those years and sort of off the stage, we would probably think of him more as a charismatic figure and less glamorous. It was that mystery created by his absence that gave him that sort of sense of glamour.
One thing I'm curious about is that, you know, glamour is seen as sort of a positive term, I think, overall in our culture. But to experience glamour, it sounds like it's kind of negative, because when you're longing for something, that's really an experience of not having something that you want. So why do we think of glamour as being something more or less positive?
Well, what I say about glamour is that glamour is a form of nonverbal rhetoric or nonverbal persuasion, and it can be used positively or negatively, and it has positive effects and negative effects. It's neither good nor bad in and of itself. We enjoy glamour. That pang of longing is not entirely unpleasant, even when we don't act on it. And the other thing is, it can be positive in the sense that it can direct us in a positive direction, even though if we're going to act on glamour, we have to edit back in all the things that it leaves out. You know, if we're inspired to pursue a career that we find glamorous because, you know, we watch CSI and we want to be a forensic scientist, well, if you're going to train for that career, you better realize that a lot of it is very tedious and it doesn't, you know, you don't have the blue lights like on TV, that sort of thing. But glamour is, it gives us a lot of pleasure, as well as taking us out of negative circumstances or the difficulties of our lives, whether in our imagination or potentially through actually acting on it.
People like you, sounds like, have unpacked glamour, broken it down to its component parts. Do you think that means that now that we understand it, you know, we have the capacity to get tired of glamour? Or do you think as a culture this is something that we'll always be sort of helpless against?
Well, I think what happens with glamour is the glamour dissipates from particular things, but then reemerges in other ones. And it's not because, you know, I came along and unpacked it as a general phenomenon. That's very difficult, and most people will never do that. It's because the particular thing that we find glamorous ceases to be glamorous either because it loses its mystery, becomes too familiar, or because the culture changes or our personality change, our lives, we go through our lives and what we want changes, and we find different things glamorous. So, the Rat Pack was glamorous in the 50s, and they became incredibly unglamorous in the 60s, and we had rock stars as being glamorous, and now there's a kind of retro glamour, that sort of thing. So, Miami was glamorous in the early 20th century, became unglamorous in the mid-20th century, then became glamorous again and then starting from the 80s on. So you have changes in what people find glamorous, but the general phenomenon no more disappears than the general phenomenon of humor disappears.
All right, Virginia, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Virginia Pastrell, columnist for Bloomberg View and former editor of Reason magazine. Her new book is called The Power of Glamour, Longing and the Art of Visual Persuasion.